The Tom Woods Show, episode 449.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. We're just coming off the best week the show has ever had in terms of downloads. So thank you so much for listening and for spreading the word about it. You folks who listen regularly are my best ambassadors, and I'm very grateful to all the sharing on social media and all that stuff. And if you're following me on Facebook, which is facebook.com/Thomas E. Woods, if you like my posts, then you're more likely to see more of them. And if you like them, more people are likely to see them. And if you share them, still more people will see them. These are ways you can help out the show at no cost to yourself, and I'm deeply grateful for all of it. Thank you so much. Well, today, this is just a fun topic, right? Who doesn't like this topic? Ron Paul versus Paul Krugman. We're talking today to Jeremy Hammond, who is the founding editor of Foreign Policy Journal at foreignpolicyjournal.com. But today in particular, we're talking to him about his little book called Ron Paul versus Paul Krugman, Austrian versus Keynesian Economics in the Financial Crisis. He's gone through and looked at what both of these men were saying about the economy beginning in the late 1990s, and the comparison is extremely instructive. You can follow Jeremy Hammond at his website, jeremyrhammond.com. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. This is an honor.
This book of yours, I was vaguely aware of, and I'm sorry to say I never took the time to look at it, but it's such a great idea, given that both of these figures are public figures. They write and say an awful lot. It's not difficult to uncover what their views are, what they were saying at particular moments in history. And given that we've gone through a particularly turbulent moment in history, it's especially helpful to go back and see what these two men had to say before and after the crisis of 2008. So I've just set this up by telling people about the book, and I've directed them to the show notes page where we're linking to it, tomwoods.com/449, and also to your website, jeremyrhammond.com. When did you get the idea? How did it occur to you? Were you watching a presidential debate, or how did this idea, how did this light bulb turn on in your mind?
It was really a product of having to endure what was going on in my Facebook feed during the presidential debates and things going on in 2012. You know, I was having to endure all these comments about, you know, Ron Paul, he's a libertarian, he's crazy, and his economic ideas are just wacko. Like, he wants to do things like end the Fed. And this was the general theme, you know, of people's comments on my Facebook feed. And then the same kind of group of people would be posting articles from Paul Krugman and saying, you know, we need to be listening to this guy. We need to do what he says to get ourselves out of this. And I would never let these things stand. I would always challenge these things and say, well, wait a minute here. Let's look at what Ron Paul was saying at the time. He was warning about the Fed creating a housing bubble that would inevitably burst and result in a financial crisis. And, well, he was right. But Paul Krugman was saying, he was advocating those exact same policies. You know, he, in fact, called for a housing bubble to replace the dot-com bubble. And this was, you know, I'd had these conversations with people, and then they'd come back with, oh, well, he was just joking when he wrote that. So I just got the idea. I was like, well, okay, but it wasn't that only mention of, you know, there's that infamous quote of his where he said, you know, the Fed needs to create a housing bubble to replace the NASDAQ bubble. And of course, later on, he would deny that. He wasn't being serious, or he had a series of denials about that later on. And I just got the idea. I was like, well, let me go back and actually review his record on the housing bubble, starting from, you know, just before the NASDAQ bubble. And let's look at what he actually said and what he actually advocated and the policies that he was in favor of. So that's really where the idea came from. And so that's what I did. I went back, you know, I just went to the New York Times and looked through his archive of blog posts and columns. And then I also, you know, found as much as I could from Ron Paul, you know, from the congressional record or articles he'd written. And I just kind of went through and compiled quotes from them, basically, and just put the quotes into context in the book and compared and contrasted them. That was kind of a fun exercise.
I had, of course, the same experience. I didn't have too many left liberals on my feed, but I would run into people who would be on the conservative right, let's say. I remember being in Utah for a conference, and some guy came up to me because he knew I was for Ron Paul, and he started hectoring me about foreign policy. And I eventually did talk to him about foreign policy, but I paused for a minute, and I said, now, hold on a minute. You do realize that Ron Paul was practically alone in public life in describing to a T exactly what happened, exactly what was going to happen in this financial crisis, and he did so on the House floor in 2001, and he continued to do so at a time when every other person you're endorsing was telling us that everything was fine. You had no, and to me, that's a pretty big deal that he was able to do that when all the experts were saying nothing was wrong and all the experts were blindsided. You really think that's just a small thing? Like it's not even a point in his column to even mention? And he tried to get back to foreign policy. And I said, wait a minute, hold on. You realize this is a world historic moment here. Almost no one saw it coming. And here you have a guy who predicts the future. And you're standing there saying to me, well, yeah, okay, all right, predicting the future, big deal. He doesn't want to get the Muslims as much as I want to. I just couldn't get over that. I finally got him to concede that, you know, doggone it, after all, that is rather a substantial point in his favor. So it's true that in your book, Ron Paul versus Paul Krugman, very blunt title, you start off, as you say, in the years before the housing bubble. You're talking about the dot-com situation. But the housing bubble is the topic that I think I want to focus most of our attention on. And in particular, I want to start off with what you said about Krugman and allegedly joking about creating a housing bubble and joking about stimulating housing and so on. It's funny, he doesn't sound like he's joking when you look back at what he was saying at the beginning of the millennium. He doesn't sound like he's speaking in a joking tone. He sounds like he's being pretty serious. What do you make of that claim that in looking back years later at what he had been saying when housing really began to take off, that this was all just a misunderstanding and it was all tongue-in-cheek and he hadn't meant to propose that?
Yeah, you know, people will say, well, he was taken out of – the quote was taken out of context. But, you know, context is not his friend in that article, because if you look at it, it's very clear. He's saying – number one, the first thing he says is, well, that's not me saying that. He was quoting – or he was paraphrasing Paul McCauley from PIMCO, saying that, you know, we need to replace the dot-com bubble with the housing bubble. So it wasn't my words. It was – I was just paraphrasing somebody else. But very clearly in this sentence, he's saying, you know, the Fed needs to do what Paul McCauley was saying. And then he goes on to say, you know, express pessimism that the Fed might not be able to pull it off. So it was very clearly advocating for that. Now, you might say, well, okay, well, he used the word bubble, but he didn't really mean Fed should create a bubble, you know. But if you look back at his columns up to that point and continuing from that point, that was in 2002 he wrote that column. But you go back to, you know, immediately from as soon as the NASDAQ bubble burst, he started calling for low interest rates. The Fed should cut rates. And he kept poo-pooing the, you know, the possibility of a recession. He's like, we don't need to worry. So a recession is something we don't have to worry about because the Fed can easily cut rates, you know, cut rates and call me in the morning. That was his prescription. And it wasn't just that he was calling for low interest rates. He was calling for low interest rates specifically to spur a boom in the housing sector.
Yeah, he came right out and said that. There's no question about that. He pinpointed housing as a sector he wanted to see this extra activity in. But now, meanwhile, what's Ron Paul saying by contrast?
Well, Ron Paul, you know, he had predicted the financial and the NASDAQ bubble. And warned against that for the same reason, you know, the Fed is inflating and producing artificially low interest rates. So when that crisis hit, Ron Paul was saying, well, we know what's going to happen. The Fed's just going to respond with more money printing and lower interest rates. And the artificially low interest rates are going to fuel another bubble that's just setting the stage for the next crisis. And it, like you said, you mentioned the speech on the House floor in 2001. He predicted a housing bubble. In 2001, so he was very specific, and that's what he was saying, you know. And so while Ron Paul was saying, you know, pushing down interest rates is the wrong policy, It's just going to set the stage for the next business cycle, the next boom bust cycle. Whereas Paul Krugman was adamant that that's exactly what we need to do. He was advocating that exact same policy that Ron Paul was warning against, and specifically to fuel a boom in housing.
In one of my own books, I can't remember if it was a Meltdown or Rollback, I quote Krugman saying something along the lines that there are so many people who are focused on trying to figure out what the cause of the present situation is, when really what we should be focused on is the solution.
Yes.
What's the problem with that?
Well, it ignores, you know, it reminds me of another thing he had written. When he finally did realize that there was a housing bubble in 2005, you know, he was writing about it. He said, you know, it looks like bubbles, you know, it looks like housing's in a bubble. And he started to acknowledge it. But it was funny. One of his columns, he wrote, well, you know, if interest rates go up, we're going to have a problem. But he didn't look at the Fed at that point. This whole time, he's been praising the Fed for pushing down interest rates and, you know, keeping housing strong. You know, this was his thing. Thanks to the Fed, housing is strong. But then in 2005, when he realized, okay, there's a bubble, he pointed at China and he said, well, you know, China is enabling the U.S. government, you know, but by buying up, you know, U.S. treasuries and buying up government debt. And that's pushing interest rates down. And that's what's fueling this bubble. So, you know, the criteria there is very, very clear. If we look at, you know, the housing, the increase in housing prices as, you know, a good thing, then the responsibility for that is the Fed's. But if we look at that, you know, increase in home prices as unsustainable and an economic bubble, then that's a bad thing. Well, then the responsibility is China's. So it just kind of depends on how you want to look at it. That was his criteria for differentiating. And then he went on after that. He went on to continue advocating low interest rates and praising the Fed for keeping the economy strong by pushing down rates and keeping the housing sector up strong. So, you know, his criteria is a little arbitrary, I would say.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, this is a short book, by the way. You can sit down and read this with no trouble at all in a very short amount of time, and you will have read substantial portions of what both of these men had to say, because you quote them copiously. And you'll have a really good understanding of the two competing points of view. So it really is, it's not just a gotcha kind of book that, well, we sure stuck it to Krugman by showing him, you know, what the score was. It also is highly instructional, because you do really get the two worldviews, the two approaches to economics, the two assessments of what was happening. So it's very, very helpful, I think. It's a useful book. I actually was inclined to look at it carefully after Gene Epstein, whom I'm hoping to have on this week, who is economics editor at Barron's, the prominent financial publication, told me just how good it was. And indeed it is. And it's, as I say, it's such an obvious idea. The sources are all out there. The Krugman is so annoying, you really want to show him. and you actually did it. You have a chapter toward the end called Know Them by Their Fruits. What are you getting at there?
Well, in the beginning of the book, the introduction, I mentioned, you know, I just there's a famous quote from the Bible where, you know, it's Jesus is warning, how do you recognize true prophets from false prophets? And of course, his answer is, you know, the true prophets, the things they say will come to pass. and the false prophets, you know, their predictions won't happen. So that was I kind of prefaced the book with that. So I kind of come back to that in the end and say, well, so let's compare, look at what Ron Paul was saying and look at what Paul Krugman was saying. And so that ought to instruct us as to, now that there's this financial crisis happening, who should we listen to now? Should we listen to the guy who correctly predicted it, you know, very precisely? Even going back to 2001, he had warned of the housing bubble, you know, as a result of Fed policy. Or should we listen to the guy who advocates the very same policy that caused the problems in the first place, only on an even greater scale? You know, doing more of what the same to get out of the problem that is what caused the problem in the first place. You know, that's Einstein's definition of insanity. So who should we listen to?
But what about Krugman's claim? He seems to claim that he was right all along.
Oh, yeah.
That he understood the whole problem all along. How can he plausibly make that claim if what you've shown in your book is accurate?
Well, every time he says that, he always points to inflation and price inflation. And he always looks at the CPI and he says, well, see, look, you know, all the gold bugs and the people, you know, the Fed bashers, they were all saying we're going to have soaring inflation if the Fed does this policy and you know, expands its balance sheet and buys up all these treasuries and pushes rates down. It's going to be hyperinflation. And they were wrong. See, because there's no inflation, you know, inflation is still low. So he always uses that. I discuss that briefly in the book, and I point out, in fact, in one article, he actually specifically criticized Ron Paul for warning of inflation. And I just kind of looked at that and I said, well, first of all, when Ron Paul talks about inflation, he means something different. When Ron Paul says inflation, he means monetary inflation as opposed to price inflation.
Okay, explain the difference.
Well, monetary inflation being, you know, the Fed creates money out of thin air and by buying up U.S. treasuries. And they monetize the U.S. debt, which expands the monetary base. And then from that, you know, newly created currency, then the Federal Reserve Bank or the fractional reserve banks then can expand the money supply further by loaning money. So every time, you know, they make a loan, that money is just created out of thin air. So this expands the money supply. So that's monetary inflation. And then the consequence of that is price inflation, where as the value of the dollar, you know, as the dollar is devalued, you have to spend more to get the same, you know, the same value back. So, you know, devalues the dollar, you know, people's standard of living goes down as a result. They have to.
But even if we are talking about price inflation, though, Bob Murphy noted on a recent episode of this show that Krugman didn't just say that inflation would be low. He actually predicted there would be deflation and perhaps accelerating deflation. And he even said, Japan, here we come, which is a reference, of course, to Japan's experience where they actually have extremely mild, but they actually have had falling consumer prices. Well, we certainly didn't get that.
We certainly did not get
outright price deflation.
That was an excellent point Murphy brought up, and I saw that article. That was excellent. So on his own criteria, he was just as wrong as you know the people he's criticizing. But another point to make is, you know, another point could be made is that, well, is a CPI an accurate measure of price inflation? And let's just assume it is. Well, to me, the biggest thing is that's wrong with that argument that he says, well, I was right and they were wrong because they predicted inflation. It's like, well, what has happened to the stock market since – you know, the Fed implemented this policy following the bursting of the housing bubble. You know, look at stock prices. What's happened to housing prices? Well, they've gone up. And just recently, just last month, I think it was, Ben Bernanke wrote an article, a blog post, saying, yeah, well, when the Fed, you know, pushes down interest rates and when we do monetary inflation, when we do this quantitative easing, that increases asset prices. That money flows into assets. So, you know, it's not like a big secret. You know, it's admitted that, yeah, we prop up asset prices, you know, like stocks, housing. So this is the thing. You can look at – he just looks at the CPI and that's it. But, you know, when we had the housing bubble, that was price inflation. You know, because it's not as though the newly printed money just flows evenly throughout the economy. You know, it will – go into specific sectors. So when the Fed responded to the NASDAQ bubble by pushing down interest rates, you know, that money flowed disproportionately into the housing sector. But of course, Paul Krugman, during that period of time, he was saying the same thing. Well, inflation is still low. You know, maybe got up to like 3% or something, according to the CPI and the Fed's preferred measure, which, you know, is not certainly not hyperinflation or anything. So he was saying the same thing then. You know, well, the naysayers are saying, well, we're going to have inflation from the Fed's low interest rate policy. But look, it's not. CPI is low. But he's just completely ignoring this, you know, huge increase in housing prices. Well, that's price inflation. So it's just how he defines price inflation and what he looks at specifically. And he just puts these blinders on. and he refuses to see anything that might contradict his point of view. So this is the thing. This is what he relies on when he says, you know, I was right and they were all wrong. He's always referring to price inflation.
You yourself, were you already knowledgeable in this area, or was it Ron Paul and the presidential campaigns that brought you into the study of Austrian economics?
I had always kind of paid attention to the Fed and always kind of had an instinctive understanding that, gosh, you know, creating money out of thin air can't possibly create wealth. And there's something wrong with that. You know, innately, I've always felt that. You know, when then I started learning about Ron Paul, the first thing that I liked about Ron Paul was after the 9/11 attacks, and he was opposed to the Patriot Act. That's the first thing I ever learned about him. But he's the guy who was against the Patriot Act. I like him. And so then I started paying more attention to him. And so, of course, during the presidential campaigns and things, I would start listening to him a lot more and his economic views, and thinking, man, he really makes a lot of sense. And in fact, I have to give you a lot of credit, Tom, because actually you're in the about the author of my book, because you have a resource page on your website, you know, Learn Austrian Economics, and I use that page extensively. And I went and I started reading, you know, particularly Murray Rothbard, and just all kinds of resources there, because I wanted to be able to better understand, because my thing is actually foreign policy. My other website, I'm the publisher of foreignpolicyjournal.com. And it's really obvious to me that, you know, if you want to understand foreign policy, you really need to have some kind of understanding of economics, because you can't separate the two. You know, our foreign policy is based on these economic, you know, like the invasion of Iraq, for example. And, you know, one factor there was Saddam's decision to switch from trading oil in dollars to euros. So, you know, there's this dollar hegemony that the U.S. is trying to sustain to maintain its empire. And, you know, that's huge. And you have to understand that. If you're going to understand foreign policy, you need to understand the dollar hegemony. So I really wanted to be able to understand this. And when the housing bubble burst, you know, I was kind of mystified. I didn't really understand what was going on, why you know, the economy behaves the way it does. So I had this kind of general understanding that, you know, well, we can't create wealth by printing money. You know, I knew that. But I really wanted to dig into it further and really understand, you know, how was Ron Paul able to see that in 2001? How did he know that? So I wanted to know, how did he do that? So I went to your page and I just started digging into those resources and really learning about the Austrian business cycle theory. And it became so clear to me, and I loved it, because, you know, especially reading Rothbard, he's just so clear. You don't need to, he doesn't write economic jargon. You know, a lot of these guys, a lot of these economists, you can't understand what they're saying. I mean, a typical layman like me just can't understand them, because they use all this jargon that seems to me designed to obfuscate. And Krugman does that too sometimes. He uses euphemisms and things to say one thing but really mean another. But the way Rothbard writes, it's just so clear. You know, you don't need to be an economist to understand what he's writing. He makes it really simple and easy to understand. So I just dug into that resource page of yours, and I came away with this understanding of the basic theory, and I answered that question. So this is exactly how Ron Paul was able to do what he did and predict as early as 2001 that there was going to be a housing bubble. And it's because of the Austrian business cycle theory and his understanding of it.
Well, you know, I appreciate your mentioning that. I'll link to that also.
Oh, yes.
At tomwoods.com/449. It's funny you mention it, because just last night I was fixing that page. It's learnaustrianeconomics.com. I was fixing it last night because I have, of course, a lot of links to the Mises Institute. And when they did their site redesign, and they have a much more attractive, easy-to-navigate site than they used to, every single link on the whole site was changed. So all of us who've been linking to it over the years had to go back and change all the links. I mean, it was, and I went back and realized, oh my gosh, this thing has been out of date for like 6 months. I've got all these dead links. So I went through and laboriously did. So now I'm ordering people, go to this page. I was working hard last night to fix it for everybody. So it's learnaustrianeconomics.com. Your website, of course, jeremyrhammond.com. And as I say, we'll link to that also, and your book, Ron Paul versus Paul Krugman, Austrian versus Keynesian Economics in the Financial Crisis, as well at tomwoods.com/449. Jeremy, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Remember, you should join the conversation yourself with your own blog. It'll help you become a better writer. It'll help you in many ways. I even show in my brand new free ebook how it can improve your positioning professionally. All kinds of benefits that come from having your own blog or site. So check out freewebsitebook.com to download that free ebook about how to do it. And I show you on a little video there how in 5 minutes you can have that blog up and running, and I will help you kickstart your blog with a little free publicity by blasting out your blog and posts to my list and to as part of my newsletter and on my own blog and so on. And I'd like to do that to help you if you're wondering about how you're going to get visitors over to your site. Well, I'll send some visitors over to that site. So now you have one less reason not to do it. So check out my deal that I'm making, giving you free publicity over at tomwoods.com/publicity. That's all for today, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.